Blog Talk Radio.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. We have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders.
George Bush has invoked a new world order without enunciating a new American purpose.
Bush said, and it's a phrase that I often use myself, that we needed a new world order, and instead it looks like we got a lot of disorder.
Today we take an essential step in defeating terrorism while protecting the constitutional rights of all Americans.
Preventing mass terror will be the responsibilities of presidents far into the future.
The Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, these are not simply words written into aging parchment. They are the foundation of liberty and justice in this country.
This is an ideological battle. Some people believe in globalism. Others of us believe in national sovereignty. It's a contest between ideologies, whether we believe in our institutions here, our national sovereignty, our constitution, or are we going to further move in the direction of international government? It's just knowledge is out there. If we look for it, you'll realize that our national sovereignty is under threat.
Was a lawyer once. His name was Francis Scott Key. He penned a song that I'm sure you're aware of. You've seen it. It's in most hymnals throughout our churches. It's called the National Anthem. It is our song as an American. We go, however, to a ball game. We stand in our church services and we sing the words of that song, and they float over our minds and our lips, and we don't even realize what we're singing. Most of us have memorized it as a child, but we've never really thought about what it means. Let me tell you a story. Francis Scott Key was a lawyer in Baltimore. The colonies were engaged in vicious conflict with the mother country, Britain. Because of this conflict and the protractedness of it, they had accumulated prisoners on both sides. The American colonies had prisoners and the British had prisoners. and the American government initiated a move. They went to the British and they said, let us negotiate for the release of these prisoners. They said, we want to send a man out to discuss this with you. They were holding the American prisoners in boats about 1,000 yards offshore. And they said, we want to send a man by the name of Francis Scott Key. He will come out and negotiate to see if we can make a mutual exchange. On the appointed day, in a rowboat, he went out to this boat and he negotiated with the British officials. And they reached a conclusion that men could be exchanged on a one-for-one basis. Francis Scott Key, jubilant with the fact that he'd been successful, went down below in the boats, and what he found was a cargo hold full of humanity, men. And he said, men, I've got news for you tonight. You're free. He said, tonight I have negotiated successfully your return to the colonies. He said, you'll be taken out of this boat, out of this filth, out of your chains. As he went back up on board to arrange for their passage to the shore, the admiral came and he said, we have a slight problem. He said, we will still honor our commitment to release these men, but it'll be merely academic after tonight. It won't matter. And Francis Scott Key said, what do you mean? He said, well, Mr. Key, he said, tonight we have laid an ultimatum upon the colonies. Your people will either capitulate and lay down the colors of that flag that you think so much of, or you see that fort right over there, Fort Henry? He said, we're going to remove it from the face of the earth. He said, how are you going to do that? He said, if you will, scan the horizon of the sea. And as he looked, he could see hundreds of little dots. And he said, that's the entire British war fleet. He said, all of the gunpowder, all of the armament is being called upon to demolish that fort. It will be here within striking distance in a matter of about 2.5 hours. He said, the war is over. These men would be free anyway. He said, you can't shell that fort. He said, that's a large fort. He said, it's full of women and children. He says, it's predominantly not a military fort. He said, don't worry about it. They said, we've left them a way out. And he said, what's that? He said, do you see that flag way up on the rampart? He said, we have told them that if they will lower that flag, the shelling will stop immediately. And we'll know that they've surrendered, and you'll now be under British rule. Francis Scott Key went down below and told the men what was about to happen. And they said, how many ships? He said, hundreds. The ships got closer. Francis Scott Key went back up on top and he said, men, I'll shout down to you what's going on as we watch. As twilight began to fall and as the haze hung over the ocean as it does at sunset, suddenly the British war fleet unleashed. He says, the sound was deafening. There were so many guns that there were no reliefs. He said, it was absolutely impossible to talk or hear. He said, suddenly the sky, although dark, was suddenly lit. And he says, from down below, all he could hear the men, the prisoners, saying was, tell us where the flag is. What have they done with the flag? Is the flag still flying over the rampart? Tell us. 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours into the shelling. Every time the bomb would explode and it would be close to the flag, they could see the flag in the illuminated red glare of that bomb. And Francis Scott Key would report down to the men below, it's still up. It's not down. The admiral came and he said, your people are insane. He said, what's the matter with them? He said, don't they understand this is an impossible situation? Francis Scott Key said he remembered what George Washington had said. He said, the thing that sets the American Christian apart from all other people in the world is he will die on his feet before he'll live on his knees. The admiral said, we have now instructed all of the guns to focus on...
me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Pain is temporary. It may last for a minute, or an hour, or a day, or even a year. But eventually, it will subside, and something else will take its place. If I quit, however, it will last forever.
The margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us. They're in every break of the game, every minute, every second.
You got a dream, you got to protect it. People can't do something themselves. They want to tell you you can't do it. You want something, go get it.
Afraid to fail. You can't always win, but don't be afraid of making decisions.
You have to believe that something different can happen. He who says he can and he who says he can't are both usually right.
That most of you say you want to be successful, but you don't want it bad. You just kind of want it. You don't want it badder than you want a party. You don't want it as much as you want to be cool. Most of you don't want success as much as you want to sleep.
Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that...
Do I ever feel like Sisyphus?
Yeah. Of course I do. I've been waiting for people to start saying, like, oh, you put another picture of the sweat and of a squat rack. Really? But I don't know if they understand. I've been getting on that squat rack and grinding it out for 25 years. And I'm not bored with it yet. It might seem like that's an unwinnable battle, but really to me, it's not about winning. It's the battle itself. It's the struggle. It's the daily test. That's what life's about. Not just physically, but mentally. Getting that rock to the top of the mountain, that's not what my goal is. My goal actually is pushing the rock. Because pushing the rock, that pushes me. That makes me tougher. That makes me harder, mentally and physically. It gives me much more than I give it. I want to struggle. I want to grind and claw and scratch, and I want to dig in and I want to push. And I don't want it to end. If I ever got the rock to the top of the mountain and it stayed there, I'd push it back down myself. I don't want to rest, and I don't want to coast, and I don't want to reach a point in my life where I say, that's it. I've done enough. I'm not going to give anymore. I'm not going to push anymore. No. No. That relentless cycle of day-to-day challenges, they aren't maddening to me. They don't frustrate me. They inspire me. Inspire me to drive and push more and to push harder. That's what that rock does to me. So I say,
dig in and get to pushing.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
It is a big idea. A new world order.
It was almost as if it were a planned implosion. It just pancaked.
Either you are with us, or you are with the terrorists.
Are not clean and strong, you will hesitate at the moment of truth. You will not kill. You will become dead Marines. And then you will be in a world of shit. Because Marines are not allowed to die without permission. Do you maggots understand?
Sir! Yes, sir!
All right, everybody, Joseph Gibson Podcasting here. Understanding the times in which you live today. Oh, let's see here. What news do we have out there to report on today? Oh, we've missed last night's show. Well, internet was down, you know. That's how it goes. That's the way it is. So we probably missed out on our big night there. That's usually where the nights... we did one the night... I think it was Thursday night there. Did a good show. Had a couple new faces call in and whatnot. Seems like the regulars that call in, they miss the new faces that call in. I don't know. It's just strange, very strange. But, you can always go back and listen to it and download. Download it. You can go to Apple, I guess, now. I think they're on Apple right now. Spotify. I know we're on there on Spotify. Let's see here. Where else are we? Stitcher, is it? Stitcher? I don't know. I forget. Anchor. I think Anchor, too. So a bunch of places there you can get the podcast here, download it, and Google Podcast, that's the one there I've been promoting, because that's the one, and it's got all the commercials, wonderful, it starts off with a commercial, a couple commercials, and then at the end it plays a couple commercials, so they had Geico on there the other day, so Geico there for some weird commercials, so Google Online, just to Google Joe Gibson Online Radio, or Joe Gibson Online Podcasting, and you'll find the Google, download the app, and you'll have the show, and it won't cost you nothing to listen to it either. So go ahead and listen to it there. I much prefer you listen to it there than other than Blog Talk. Blog Talk doesn't do nothing but keep all the revenues that we generate for them. So let's see here. We had the conspiracy theory one there that I got requested for to play, but first we'll go into some news here and see what we got here. Inside Black Lives Matter. Horowitz talks with dozens of BLM activists, leaders, including one of the group's organizers, Malina Abdullah. Abdullah provided an interesting look into the mentality of BLM leadership, calling the destruction of Louisville, Minneapolis, Ferguson, and New York City freedom riots. Horowitz explained to viewers that dozens of people were killed and injured, and thousands of businesses were burned down, with many of the deceased minorities and many of the businesses being minority-owned. Damages from the riots are estimated to be up to $5 billion. And they talked with a pastor on the south side of Chicago to find out how the riots, which mostly took place to minority communities, affected the people living there. Pastor Corey Brooks told Horowitz, when people say they're proud about the rioting and looting that has gone on, it amazes him. says that these are individuals who don't understand the impact that it has on people who live in these communities, he continued. Brooks explained that when communities are already struggling economically, it's crushing to have more businesses close down or leave town due to the rioting. The same black people that you're saying you want to help are the same stores you're rioting and looting. Brooks said next, Horowitz focused on BLM's defund the police agenda, which has quickly turned into abolish the police. Nearly all the BLM leadership have publicly called out only to defund the police, but rather abolish them. Noted. When he asked original BLM organizer Malini Abdullah about abolishing the police, she claimed policing evolved from chattel slavery, saying, people need to prepare to completely dismantle the system of public safety. Of course, as Pastor Brooks told Horowitz, defunding or abolishing the police would impact communities of color most of all. During the BLM riots of 2020, over 1,000 law enforcement officers were injured and over a dozen cops were shot. Asked about the targeting and killing of police officers, Abdul told Horowitz, I can't talk about that, as a creepy Cheshire grin spread across her face. Not only do BLM leaders want to destroy America's judicial infrastructure, but also our economic infrastructure, as their Marxist agenda directly opposes our free market system. Abdullah claimed capitalism is destroying America and that it super exploits black people. Despite the BLM organizers' candid admission during her interview with Ami Abdullah revealed, she actually held back due to safety issues. I probably would have been a lot more forthcoming, she noted. Share this video to spread the word about the true agenda of Black Lives Matter. Well, let's play that video and see how we go. Hopefully we have some good audio on this. And let's, so we'll see here. Let's try it out.
There are American cities burning, says Stephen Miller. Shut the F up, says Mark Milley. He should have been fired on the spot. Hey, Donald Trump, you should have fired him on the spot right then, you idiot. Same with William Barr. Like, did they somehow convince you that what you were seeing with your own eyes was not actually happening? Was it a political algebraic equation that they put up for you? Or was this just blatant insubordination that should have been punished? Milley said, what we have here, Mr. President, is a protest. Yeah, just a peaceful protest that kills dozens of people, burns down the entire country. It's one of these peaceful protests. So General Mark Milley and William Barr are basically responsible for the images that you're seeing on screen right now. Like, that's basically their fault. They are basically the ones who are inside the castle whispering like worm tongue into the ear of the king to get him to not fight back. And you need to defend your civilization against the onslaught of this cancer of progressivism, liberalism, and globalist brainwashing. This is a life or death situation. General Milley the moron. General Milley the coward. I thought maybe I'd gone a little bit too hard on him, you know, saying certain things that I said. I was a little, you know, after the show, I sort of calmed down. I thought, yeah, maybe I shouldn't have gone so hard on that. Maybe I should have. But then the rest of the day, I see everybody else is basically on my level. Basically, everybody else sees the same thing I saw. Of course, I went back into the past, his previous cowardice, to expose to you. Well, now there's a new story here. Top U.S. general rejected Trump's suggestion military should, quote, crack skulls during protests last year, new book claims. Top U.S. general repeatedly pushed back on then-President Trump's argument that the military should intervene violently in order to quell the civil unrest that erupted around the country last year. Joint Chief Chairman General Mark Milley often found he was the lone voice of opposition to those demands during heated Oval Office discussions, according to excerpts of a new book obtained by CNN from Wall Street Journal reporter Michael Bender. Titled, Frankly, We Did This Win the Election, The Inside Story of How Trump Lost, The book reveals new details about how Trump's language became increasingly violent during Oval Office meetings as protests in Seattle and Portland began to receive attention from cable news outlets. The president would highlight videos that showed law enforcement getting physical with protesters and tell his administration he wanted to see more of that behavior, the excerpts show. Top U.S. general hit back against this. Trump said, quote, just shoot them on multiple occasions inside the Oval Office, according to the excerpts. When Milley and then-Attorney General William Barr would push back, Trump toned it down but only slightly, Fender adds. Well, shoot them in the leg or maybe the foot, Trump said, but be hard on them. So I think we know who we have to thank for the results of the election. I think we know who to thank for $2 billion worth of damage, the unmitigated disaster of the entirety of 2020. Maybe we forget what 2020 was like, but I was going back through and looking through my archive of the videos to find a few videos, and I just clicked on a random folder on my desktop of the 31st of May, 2020. And it is a folder, that was actually one of the videos. I think that was on the 31st of May, them attacking that truck driver. There were like 100 videos in that folder. And all of the video names were like Boston, Minneapolis, Portland, Houston, Albuquerque, just every city in the United States. And it's just a folder full of violence, of fire, of crime, of just insanity. This was a true insurrection. This was a true rising up of violent extremists burning down the city. And when the duly elected authorities, President Trump, tried to exercise his power as chief law enforcement agent of the entire United States in order to stop the ongoing criminality that we are seeing splayed across our TV screens every single day, he was stopped. He was prevented from doing that. He was subverted. He was disobeyed. So treason. Treason, treason, treason. Apparently Stephen Miller was arguing about this, and he was told by Milley, shut the F up, Stephen, according to the excerpt. Miller, so during one Oval Office debate, senior Trump advisor Stephen Miller chimed in, equating the scenes unfolding on his television to those in third world country and claiming major American cities have been turned into war zones. These cities are burning, Miller said, according to the excerpts. The comment infuriated Milley, who viewed Miller as not only wrong but out of his lane, Bender writes, noting the Army general who had commanded troops in Afghanistan and Iraq. Yeah, see, he knows how to win things. See, he's been in Iraq and Afghanistan for 20-plus years. He knows how to get things done. Okay. I'm not sure I'd be touting that as my background, but all right. But he spun around in his seat and pointed a finger directly at Miller. Shut the F up, Stephen, Milley snapped, according to the excerpts. So let's just go over this little conversation again. There are American cities burning, says Stephen Miller. Shut the F up, says Mark Milley. He should have been fired on the spot. Hey, Donald Trump. You should have fired him on the spot right then, you idiot. Like, did they somehow convince you that what you were seeing with your own eyes was not actually happening? Was it a political algebraic equation that they put up for you? Or was this just blatant insubordination that should have been punished? Milley said, what we have here, Mr. President, is a protest. Yeah, just a peaceful protest that kills dozens of people, burns down the entire country. It's one of these peaceful protests. So General Mark Milley and William Barr are basically responsible for the images that you're seeing on screen right now. Like, that's basically their fault. They are basically the ones who are inside the castle whispering like worm tongue into the ear of the king to get him to not fight back. Wow. Now that I say that, that is literally exactly the metaphor, right? In Lord of the Rings, Rohan has all these great warriors that could stand up against the horde of the or it's just destroying and murdering everybody. And so what do? They send a little agent to be by the king, to make the king weak and make him not respond to the aggression of the Yorks. He's Mark Milley's literally Wormtongue. And Andrew Barr is like Wormtongue, but fat. Just amazing, just incredible. So I want to go to Max from Kansas, because he brings up one of the other occurrences that has happened this week, just the latest in a long line of assassinations by black extremists of white people in America. Thanks for calling in, Max. You're on the air.
Hey, what's going on, Harrison?
How you doing?
Yeah, pretty good. Also, behind the plane, just to comment on what you were saying earlier, You really can't go hard enough on these people. I said some really terrible things about Millie and Barr and all these other people. And I'm like, calm down. I think I really probably shouldn't have said that. And then as soon as their name hits the headlines the next day of saying or doing something absolutely stupid, I'm like, I really don't regret that anymore.
Right.
So about that guy who shot him in the head, and I.
Well, let me tell people in case they aren't aware. This is from humanevents.com. The NFAC, which is the Not Effing Around crew, which we know is the black militia that goes around threatening white people, a militia member wanted for shooting police officer in the head in Florida. Daytona Beach police are offering $100,000 reward for anyone who can help locate the man who allegedly shot an officer. The wanted man, 29-year-old Othal Ozone Wallace, allegedly shot the police officer, leaving him in critical condition following surgery. So he's a member who's marched with the Black Nationalist NFAC militia, and he, I guess, just walked up and shot a cop in the head. And a more egregious act of violence than the Oath Keepers or the Proud Boys have ever even remotely approached, but, of course, they're not domestic terrorists. But, yeah, I'm sorry, Max. I just wanted to make sure people knew exactly what you were talking about.
No, yeah, and it's just I know the media never covers it, but it gets so angering when these sorts of things happen and there is absolutely no coverage of it.
Yep.
And they get away with it, and somehow the movement's still supported. These organizations that these terrorists are a part of are still 100% supported by people. People still just give them their money. They still, they still support them. And it's really, really terrible. But and what you were talking about earlier with a Barr and who was the other person?
Milley. Yeah, General Milley.
Milley. You're absolutely right. Trump definitely should have fired him on the spot, because if he would have, we probably would have saw a lot less damage to those cities.
It would have stopped. What do you think happens if you don't punish people for committing these crimes? They just keep committing crimes. But let's be clear. It wasn't just the billions of dollars in damage. It wasn't just the priceless personal artifacts that were burned to ash, like the bookstore in Portland with all of the rare and collectible books. It wasn't just the, incredible damage and insurance payouts. It wasn't just the dozens of people killed actually during the riots. The fallout of these riots has been the defunding of the police, which has led to massive increases in crime across the entire country. So in reality, it's not just the damage of the riots and the killing of the riots that William Barr and Mark Milley are responsible for. It's the thousands of deaths that have come as a consequence of the political achievements of the people who did the rioting. So these massive increases in crime, like Portland up 533% homicides, those can all be laid at the feet of General Mark Milley and William Barr, murderers.
I don't talk enough. All right, everybody. Okay, Joseph Gibson podcasting live here, understanding the times in which you live today. We're going to be calling Black Lives Matter, actually. I've got a phone number for them. But I'm going to go with a couple people on the phone lines here. And let's see here. Let's go with my first one. Ah, I think this is old Mel. We'll be exposing Black Lives Matters here tonight. So I got some phone numbers here. But Mel, I think this is Mel from Florida. I think this is him. So what's going on there, buddy?
Nah, you got Sarah instead. Mel's still trying. He could be the other number, but this is my number.
Oh, okay.
So, hey.
I was saying, wait a second. Unless Mel turned into a woman here and he joined the LGBTQ community there. what's going on?
I'll change the other number, but not much. I just seen that I just happened to drove past and seen that your eye finally caught you. You get my message I sent you? Not that. That's a whole other conversation for another day. But
actually, I don't think so, but I'll read it. My wife, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Oh, I have a lady friend that wants to get exposed the corruption that's going on with her son was killed in Missouri. Point blank to the head, they killed him. They shut the case, said it was redeemed justifiable when it wasn't. The kid had nothing to do with it. It was a bad deal. So she needs some exposure.
I got an open platform here for the next 2 hours. If she wants to call in, she could just call in and just say, hey, you know, I have a story to tell, and I'll give her as much time as she likes. I mean, if she wants, it's up to her. Give her the number if she's available. If not, we could do it another night, you know.
Yeah, I'll try here to maybe get a hold of her, but yeah, I think it might be a little short notice, but
yeah, I know. Well, hey, you know what? If you got a story to share, you know, look, the show's in 21 different countries here. You know, I mean, and I'm live right now, so you know, if she wants to do it, because you never know what tomorrow can bring. You know, they may kidnap me, they may kidnap you, they may kidnap her. You know, you never know, right?
That is true. But it is kind of short notice, but I will try to get a hold of her as we're talking. And
yeah.
We're doing Black Lives Matter tonight. And anyways, Black Lives, all lives matter. Fuck the Black Lives Matter. All lives matter.
There you go. All right.
No lives matter. No lives matter unless all lives matter. That's the way it should be. Right?
Well, I got to agree with you, and that's what I've been trying to cover here is get everybody motivated here because we're all in this together. And if we're going to cordon each other off and single each other out and destroy each other, that's the globalist elitists love that, and that's exactly what they want.
Oh yeah, we do all their dirty work for them. Hell yeah, they do.
Yeah. Mel's in the chat room actually. Mel, when you said you were going to be on the phone line, where are you, Mel? Mel's in the chat room right now, so he's saying hello. So he's saying, where the heck are you, Mel? So I don't know, but I guess he says not on my watch. That's what he says, Sarah. He says hello, Sarah. Not on my watch. So, but if you want to message her, go right ahead. And listen, everybody, 657-383-0616 is the phone number to call. But Sarah, what's going on out there in Minnesota? I know you guys got your own Floyd Square up there in Minnesota, right? I mean, how's that going? And how's it going with your truck?
Stealing
your truck?
Don't even know. Did you know that George Floyd was from Houston, Texas? I just came back from Texas. I was in Texas for a week with my girlfriend, and he was not liked in Houston, Texas at all.
Really?
He's a thug. Absolutely. Yep.
Wow.
That's where
they won't talk about that on CNN.
Nope, they don't. And they don't at all. They don't show the footage of when the cops, 45 minutes before the cops took him down. I'm not saying that cop doesn't have to pay for the consequence for what he did. I'm not saying that at all. A life is a life, period. But 22 years in prison, that's too much.
I know.
His whole life is ruined.
He got shafted.
That's too much.
He got shafted.
And that kid, and George was a thug. He, from the minute they walked up to his car to the fucking minute they took him down, he was fucking, don't shoot me! And he was being a pain. Now, again, it comes back to his life. Nobody has the right to take his life. The cop did go too far, but by what he's done, his life is ruined. You know, he's got nothing. He's got no pension. He's got nothing. So fucking give him probation. Let him be. You know, he fucked up. The guy had, the cop had a good record. It wasn't like he had fucking a bad record. He had all this other shit on his record or anything. This is a first-time incident. Yeah, he's got to pay for it, but not this much. This bullshit. And then to give George Floyd fucking wings and a halo on a mural on a fucking side of a wall?
Yeah. I know. Hey, listen, real quick, I wanted to ask you. You know, I was watching a documentary on BBC or the Frontline story, and Barry was on there. They interviewed Barry. They called him. The guy called Barry when he was inside the jail.
Really?
You know, they took it down, though. They took it down. They flagged it. YouTube flagged it. But it still might be up. I'll try to find it and send it to you because they keep putting it up. But they did a documentary on the militia and, war with the government and stuff like that. And then so obviously they talked about the Michigan governor story. And then they said Barry Croft, the most violent leader of the militia, 3%ers of the entire country. I was like, oh, my God.
They said Barry's the most violent? No way.
They said he was the most violent and most disruptive, yeah.
He was not. That's because he talked good shit. That's what they're doing. It's all conspiracy. No victim, no crime, Joe. Remember that. No victim, no crime.
I know. It was messed up, but Barry broke it down to him. But you know they edit that stuff, and they probably dissected a lot of it. But he broke it down to him, and he's like, because they were like, are you associated with this group and this group? And he's like, man, I see. He said, I talked to him online. He said, those kids I get a kick out of, you know. And you know how Barry talked, you know. You know, he says, I got a kick out of that, you know. But he goes, when they scooped me up or whatever, you know, how he talks and everything, I was laughing to hell. But I'll tell you what, I just don't see how he's going to beat this, man. I mean, how is he going to get off of this? I mean, they got him. They kidnapped him. He's locked in there. What can he do?
I know. He's going to beat it, though. Unfortunately, it's going to take a minute. I hope so.
And you know, the whole thing of it is, he was not a part of that ring, though. He was associated with them, but I remember he was not a part of that. You know, they all went back to that barbecue he had back down in here in North Carolina. Thank God I didn't go. You know, he invited me. Thank God I stayed home. You know, because he called me, where are you at? I said, I ain't coming. but they link it all to that, and that's where that FBI, they went in there and they infiltrated it, you know?
Yep, they infiltrated him, and they did, the fucking FBI guy should, he got paid good money for that, and you know what? It's just wrong. No victim, no crime. They talk shit. Everybody does. So we all should be arrested? How many times, excuse me, have we been in the Zoom room and talked massive shit? Massive.
Yeah.
Like I said, just shit that, you know, that doesn't mean we're going to act on it. That's a way to get rid of people's frustrations. People get frustrated.
Oh, they were in there. They were in there in that Zoom room, you know. You know they were in that Zoom conference. You know that. They were in there because one guy called in one night. You don't work there, I don't think. Some guy called in, and he sounded like a Fed, you know, and he was in there trying to get I forgot. Oh, he was talking to John. He was talking to John, and he was going back and forth with John. He's like, wow, you're a violent guy. You know, I was like, John, shut up. This guy, I'm telling you, he's going to, you know. So I remember that night. they were watching. It was crazy, man. It was crazy. But they,
I believe you.
Huh?
I believe you. I said, I don't remember
that. And you remember Mitch Gerber? You remember Mitch Gerber, right? He disappeared. Remember him?
Yep. You haven't heard nothing from him yet?
He just disappeared. Heard him on an FM radio station, I was driving down the road, and I heard him giving an interview about the Falun Gong and China, and organ harvesting in China. But that was pre-recorded. It had to have been. But he's disappeared. No social media, no nothing. I mean, and they said that he was going to get kidnapped and murdered. That's what he said. You know, he said they're going to kill him. I remember that.
Yep, because he was exposing them. He was opening them up and exposing them.
Yeah.
And they don't like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely. Well, look at this. You know, Majelikhan, too. I think Majelikhan was killed.
I
think he was killed on purpose. Yeah, I do.
And maybe he was, because he had a big voice, and he came over onto the NSM platform one night and did an interview. I don't do shows over there anymore. We had a little falling out there, but, you know, that's beside the point. But anyway, I don't do shows over there anymore. But he came on one night, and he did an interview with me on there, and a lot of people liked what he had to say, and I think he was an organizer, and he didn't care about nothing. But and he would just say whatever he said. So I wouldn't be surprised if they killed him.
No, they shut down the fucking highway to get him to the hospital, right? They knew who he was. People knew who he was.
Really?
Yeah,
they
took him out. Yep.
Wow. Yep. That's why they're staying all quiet, because I don't, you know, his son or whatever, he came on my show one time over all the years, one time, and he said, I won't, and his son, that's why his son only sent me one message, and that was it, and then after that, he hasn't said nothing, you know, so I don't know. You can read into a lot of stuff, you know, sometimes, but who knows, you know, but he was he was organizing people, though, that's for sure.
Yep, and that's what they don't want. He wasn't organizing just one group either. He was organizing all of the women, all of the groups, everybody. He stood for that.
Yeah. You can't do it. That's what I'm saying. As soon as you start getting large, you start getting popular, that's it. They're going to whack you. I got a private caller here, Sarah. I don't know. I think this might be Sarge. I'm not sure if it's Sarge or not. Let me see. Go ahead. Is this Sarge?
Yeah, Joe. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I got a real doozy for you tonight. How you doing?
Uh-oh. Go ahead.
Okay. We've all been regaled to the sight of transgender track runners and transgender weightlifters. Well, now I think we've hit a new apex. Are you ready? You got the seatbelt buckle?
I'm ready. I'm sitting down for this one.
For the first time in the history of the pageant, Miss USA, a transgender, quote, woman, unquote, has won the crown. Catahoula Enriquez was crowned the winner Sunday at the South Point Hotel Casino in Las Vegas. This is considered to be a preliminary competition for the Miss Nevada USA pageant. She, quote, she, unquote, beat 21 other candidates to represent Nevada in the Miss USA pageant that will be held on November 29th.
Anybody wants to get on?
Hey,
you women
out there,
you got
men are
one.
Taking over from you.
Oh, my God.
Communion. Thank you.
Hey, listen, what's the name of this individual? Do we call her male or female, or him or her? What do we do?
Catahoula Enriquez. And it was crowned the winner.
Hang on, I got background noise from Sarah there. Hang on, go ahead, Sarge.
Again, look, they're saying, and the Associated Press is calling him, her, XY, whatever, a transgender woman. I guess we're supposed to go along with the deceit. I don't know.
Oh,
if it's got
Lord.
XY chromosomes, it's a man. I don't care what it looks like on the outside.
I think that's the whole purpose of this COVID thing, man, this magnetic crap they're coming up with. Anybody who wants to queue in here, press the number one. I just see about seven of you on there that you keep hanging up on me and calling back in. Like four. Well, actually, there's four of you there. You keep hanging up and calling in. You got to press one if you want to talk, so I don't know if you got a bad connection or not. But so I think that's what this whole objective is with this COVID thing. And I think we're all just going to be one people, controlled, you know, and that's what they want. You know, I think they want, there's going to be no man, there's going to be no female, no woman or whatever, you want, whatever. I don't want to offend anybody out there. But we're all just going to be one slave. How about that, right? Or wait, one SERP? One number? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, Joe, I tell you, I can't wait for the swimsuit competition. And I'm waiting to see the memes that will ensue if this dude braids down a catwalk with a potato in his sack.
She's probably and a big Adam's apple. You ever notice that?
Man,
you never notice
know,
that
man.
The men,
admit,
they got
I,
Adam's
I look,
apple.
I took a look at a picture of this guy on the web, and at first glance, I wouldn't think it was a boy either. At first glance, certainly not.
Unreal. Man, you got to put that link in the chat room.
It is, apparently, according to the news report, it's a man.
Unreal. Well, I tell you what, you know, that is insane. What the hell is going on, man? What type of pageant was this now? This was Miss America?
Miss USA pageant, Nevada competition. For the state of Nevada.
And it's got to be like a Latino, right? It's a Latino name, right? That's what it is. It's
Latino
like a
name,
brown person. It can't be black,
yeah,
can't be white.
She is not, but, you know, they're kind of macho down there in most Latin countries, you know.
Another Michelle Obama, huh? Another Michelle Obama, right?
You said it, not me.
hey, let me get
another
the fire.
Thing too, man. Did you hear what this punk Cyrus Vance just did with Trump?
No, why? No. Go ahead.
Cyrus Vance says that they don't currently plan to charge the Trump Organization with crimes related to allegations of hush money payments. You know, the non-disclosure agreement with Stormy Daniels, they were trying to make into a hush money case, which is the most absurd thing ever. Because they were trying to make some kind of hush money thing out of it. Since when is a non-disclosure agreement hush money? Between two private parties. He wasn't even
it was a non-disclosure. Yeah, it was, but it was between a corporation.
And
yeah, it was
doing hush money. He wasn't even a politician. He wasn't even in elected office. He was a private citizen having a agreement with another private citizen.
All right. Hey, Sarge, hang on. I got the Black Lives. Hang on, Sarge. I got the Black Lives phone number right here. I'm going to try calling them. So I'm going to call them live, and then I'll open up the phone lines to everybody else. So I'm going to be calling them live here. So I'm anything you want to address, Sarge, with the Black Lives Matter group?
What are you going to ask them?
I don't know. I'm kind of like just going to have to wing it, you know. I got this number, like, on the fly here.
Oh,
and,
I'd love
and
it,
I verified
it. Hell
it's real.
Yeah, let's get it on.
All right, let's talk to them. Let's see what they're doing here to
save our
country.
Let's do it.
All right, here they go.
Thank you for calling. Please leave your name and number after the sound of the beep, and I will contact you before the next business day.
No, next business day.
At the tone, please.
I'm not going to leave a message. I'll get them, though, before the line. I'm trying to get them on my other phone line and trying to tell them I'm trying to get them because somebody sent me a text message saying that they will come on. So I'm trying to get them. But so it went straight to voicemail. So it's a cell phone, obviously. They're like really, you know, this is the one in North Carolina, Black Lives Matter. You know, so I want to talk to them and see what the hell they're doing and how they're trying to save our
republic. Let me tell you a truly frightening concept that they're coming up with. You may not be familiar with this. You may not have heard about it, but I want to pull your coat to it while it's still in the nascent stage. Because remember, today's absurdity becomes tomorrow's reality. Never forget that with these leftists. Never. You know what?
That's right.
Now, you know that one of the biggest proponents of critical race theory is Ibram X. Kendi. You've heard of him, haven't you?
No, I don't even know who that is, to be honest with you.
Well, he wrote a book called How to Be an Anti-Racist. He's quoted all over the place. He's all over the TV and cable news, especially on CNN. Well, that might explain why you haven't seen him. But elsewhere in liberal circles, he's considered a great big secular saint darling. Anyhow, he's one of the foremost advocates of critical race theory. And he was quoted by General Miley as one of the officers he's reading to understand white rage. But anyway, Kendi.
White rage?
Yeah. Remember Miley testified for Congress the other day? And he was talking about, the reason he's studying critical race theory is because he wants to use it to help him to understand, quote, white rage, unquote. Because one of the things that critical race theorists talk about is the idea of white people being enraged at the fact that people of color are advancing in today's racist society. General Miley was telling the congressman who were interviewing him why he was reading critical race theory. Anyway, he's full, the general's full of it, but anyway. Kendi's a big deal in liberal circles and critical race theory. Just take my word for it. He is. But he appeared in a magazine called The Politico, and this is what he's proposing. Now, you're ready for this, because I want you to take a deep breath and listen to what he wants to see. And again, I want to remind you, today's absurdity will be tomorrow's reality if it's not checked. This is what he wants.
Go ahead, real quick, because I got a bunch of callers here. I got to get the 519 next.
To fix the original sin of racism, Americans should pass an anti-racist amendment to the United States Constitution that enshrines two guiding anti-racist principles. Racial inequity, notice I didn't use the word equality, this is what he said. Racial inequity is evidence of racist policy and the different racial groups are equal. The amendment would make unconstitutional racial inequity over a certain threshold as well as racist ideas by public officials. Now, this is really ominous. It would establish and permanently fund the Department of Anti-Racism, DOA, composed of formerly trained experts on racism and no political appointees. The DOA would be responsible for pre-clearing all local, state, and federal public policies to ensure they won't yield racial inequity, monitor these policies, investigate private racist policies when racial inequity surfaces, and monitor public officials for expressions of racist ideas. And finally, the DOA would be empowered with disciplinary tools to wield over and against policymakers and public officials who do not voluntarily change their racist policies and ideas. Can you imagine a more totalitarian setup to be created by constitutional amendment? It would be totalitarian.
Sergeant, I wanted to ask you real quick. Sergeant, I did want to ask you a question. As a retired Chicago police officer, right? I'm going to get to the next caller here. I want you to think. You can answer this. Go ahead, because I got a bunch of people here that want to get in. As do you still stay in contact with the Chicago? I know you got many different probably precincts or divisions there in Chicago, but the people, like, do you still stay in contact with a lot of those people? And what are they?
Yeah, I still
what's
stay
their
in contact
opinion?
With many of my old colleagues. Yes, we all feel right, the
so,
same way.
All right. Well, so they feel so. Basically, they're pretty pissed off at the way things are going because Chicago is a freaking war zone.
I can't think of any of them that's going along with what's going on today.
Well,
even one guy who's kind of liberal I used to argue with on a fairly regular basis, he has completely changed his mind and come over to our side.
Wow. Wow. All right, let me get to, let's see here. I got, 509. Where did he go? There he is. That's 614 and then a private caller. Go ahead, 509.
Hey, what's happening, Joe? It's Eddie.
Hey, Eddie. What's up, man?
Yeah, nothing. I got the notification about, you know, trying to reach out to BLM. And I was going to say, you know, good luck with that. These people, you know, they hardly ever return phone calls. And even if you leave a detailed message, if they find out you're a white person, they'll be like, oh, fuck that cracker. it would have been interesting to see them pick up.
But there's
though.
A lot of white people marching with them, though. You know, that's what I get. How
sure.
do they get in contact with them, you know? Or there's
well,
a guy
probably,
special, like Marxist click.
I would say it's probably, you know, they know somebody who's a member or a registered supporter. And, you know, every black person has their token white guy.
Oh, well, I guess, yeah. What do they call them? They're not Uncle Tom, so what do they call them? Uncle Jimmy's? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Something.
I mean, I don't know. They
call
know, it's like
them
if a black
allies.
Guy hangs out,
allies.
I don't know, man. I don't know nothing about that crap. But, yeah, man, I've been trying to get them. They text me back, though, one of them from South Carolina, and they gave me the North Carolina number. So I tried reaching them, reaching out to them. But, you know,
right.
We'll see what happens. I know I got a bunch of people on the phone line. Maybe we got somebody on here from there. I don't know.
Who knows?
So,
who knows?
Yeah, man. So, hey, I'm going to try patching a couple of these people through, okay? I'll leave your line open, though.
Hey, go for
ahead. 6-1. All right, 614, go ahead.
Hello, Joe. How's it going tonight?
Oh, I recognize the voice now. Yeah, oh, yeah. What's up, brother? How you been, man?
Oh, well, you know, on the topic of BLM, Antifa, and all of that garbage, I was just having a discussion with a good friend of mine tonight over some beers about the progress being made or lack thereof on that front. Are you familiar with what Governor DeSantis did here recently in Florida?
No, I'm not. No, actually, I'm not, actually.
So they're touting a whole bunch of laws that DeSantis has passed, supposedly. The post actually reads, it's going around on social media, that he dropped a nuke on Antifa BLM. And I kind of I'm really sickened by what I see because it really smacks to me of the Patriot Act anti-terrorism garbage that George W. Bush put forward, which if any patriot is paying attention, understands that it really destroyed the rights of Americans and had nothing to do with Islamic terrorism, especially as since the Patriot Act has been passed. You can't even say Islamic terrorism now without being a racist. So that is actually the Patriot Act is now being used against the general American population at large.
Wow. It was coming. We knew that. We knew it was coming. I mean, they've been doing away in stages, but now the governor is actually enacting things. So the enemy combatant thing and the Patriot Act that we talked about so many times, we are the enemy combatants. We the people.
Right,
so
you're right,
because
they get,
you know,
to define who or what that is moment by moment. They never defined it in their act. So Governor DeSantis did the exact same thing on the Florida level here recently. It says that he announced the new Law Enforcement Protection Act. During this
what?
Act, it says you – yes. So in Florida, if you are arrested during a riot, stay in jail until you stand before a judge. So what I presume that to mean is that when they are arresting people by the thousands during what they define as a riot, they don't have the ability to give you a speedy trial, charges, and all of that, right? Because they got 10,000 people in custody or whatever. That's the reason they never really mass incarcerate people, because they can't give them their due process.
Yeah.
So what DeSantis just did was deny you your right to due process and a speedy trial. Now, of course,
so, Habeas corpus has been thrown out the window anyway, hasn't it, mainly? I mean,
And we saw that, and we saw that during the rally in D.C. that Trump called for when he called all the patriots to the slaughter in Washington, D.C. in January. We've got 400 patriots that are sitting in prison right now under FBI investigation just because they were there when the cops and everyone in Washington, D.C. went ahead and let everyone into the building. So, that habeas corpus is all but gone, but they're making that law now. So,
I was just talking to Sarah actually in Minnesota there about Barry. He did an interview on Frontline there. And he's been kidnapped, for that governor kidnapping thing. And we know Barry was, I don't know if we should even say this, they might come get us, but, he came on this podcast, well, everyone knows, many, many, many times, and look, man, where's this, like you said, kidnapped, they're kidnapped and they're locked in
Barry,
there, and they're under investigation.
Barry was, he spoke of things that should not have happened. Because, and I've had arguments with Barry about committing our children to the meat grinder. So I am not ready to start a war. That's not going to happen. The only people that ever need to be held accountable for their actions are the ones committing the treason. And so if we go out and we start a fight with the local municipalities, a whole lot more people, including the people who consider themselves the policy enforcers, the police and stuff, most of them are naive about what they serve. They are trying to serve in honor, but they can't because the agents they serve are not honorable. But they don't need to perish or die or be harmed in the process. So I'm trying to always take into account that the real perpetrators of this who know what are going on are a higher level than your locality generally, the kind of people you would try to be assaulting. Now, very obviously, he was going after the governor. The governor of Michigan is undoubtedly one of the most oppressive people of tyranny that I have ever met, and she deserves some justice. Who's going to deliver that justice? I don't know. That's not really, it's up to the local sheriff to do that, and obviously the local sheriff doesn't have the stones to do his own job, so the people of that locality, that county, need to hold their county sheriff accountable and apparently are unwilling to do that. So it's up to the people. The people are always at the source. What are you doing to hold your local county sheriff? You elect that man, right? He answers to you. He's the highest law enforcement officer of the land. He is the only law enforcement officer that answers directly to the people. It doesn't answer to the bureaucracy. So that's where that should have been left. And if he won't do his job to remove Governor Whitmer from her office for violating the rights under color of law in violation of every U.S. code and constitutional right and protected right and God's protected rights that is the issuer of rights, if we won't hold that man accountable, the only man that answers to us to do his job, then we really are at fault for the fact that Governor Whitmer continues to exist and continues to reign in tyranny fashion because we just refuse to do our job.
But the problem is, how do we do our job, though? Okay, so the citizen, and I got another private caller that's been waiting a while here. How do we do our job? How do the people do their job? According to this group there, now I don't know what their stances are as individuals, but according to the reports, is that they were going to make a citizen's arrest. Is that lawful or is that unlawful?
That is absolutely lawful. Yeah, it's absolutely lawful. So the city of Columbus, Ohio, where I reside, recently hired a chief of police who is not a trained officer. She has no certification or license to be an officer. She's a politician because of all this BLM, Antifa stuff going on right now. They decided that all cops are racist and all policies are racist and being applied in unequally and whatnot. You know, the whole thing that's going on everywhere in this country right now. They hired a woman that is strictly a politician to be in the city of Columbus, Ohio, as the police chief from Detroit, Michigan, who has never been a police officer in her life. She's never been trained, doesn't even have a license to carry a weapon. Okay? So what is this woman supposed to do as an officer, technically, as a police officer, as the chief of police, should she need to arrest someone? The governor, or the mayor, sorry, not the governor, the mayor of the city of Columbus stated that she can effect a citizen arrest just like any other citizen. She can open carry like any other citizen. That was his answer.
So, but this, isn't that what these groups really are trying to do? I mean, the murder, like for instance, I mean, Sarah was on here from Minnesota. And she said, look, you know, all lives, you know, matter. You know, the police are pulling people over, dragging them out of their car, putting their knees on their throats, killing them. And I mean, who's held? I mean, if nobody does anything, and you can't get justice through the courts, you can't get justice through the lawyers, you can't get justice through, you know, what are you gonna, you know, unless you got money, what are you to do? I mean, is it really
the wrong
thing to do they're doing?
So does the title and the costume give more rights? That's what we're asking. So in that goes back to what I was talking about with DeSantis. So another one of the parts of this law: strike a cop. Mandatory 6 months. So you've already been denied your total due process.
Yeah.
Mandatory 6 months. Yeah. Who decides who struck the cop? The cop himself? Who's a witness to that, and how do we define what that means, and who can actually prove or disprove whether that happened or not? Because we already see resisting arrest being abused horridly.
Yeah.
We already see officer safety abused horridly. It's used to summarily execute people on the roadside. Officer safety, I thought he had a gun. As long as the officer thinks he had a gun, he's allowed to shoot anybody he wants without accountability, even though you and I would be held to a totally different standard. If you and I went and shot somebody in cold blood and all we said was, I thought he had a gun, we would still go to prison.
Yeah, good point.
So, yeah, there's a totally separate standard to that. Who's holding them accountable? That's a great question. That's the difference between your police and your sheriff. You can't remove a police officer. You can't even sue him because they give him immunity by corporation. How do they do that? Because he's an agent. He doesn't act on his own. He's not even acting in his own capacity. He's acting as a representative of a fictitious entity that doesn't exist anywhere but on paper. The sheriff is the lawkeeper elected as the person to be the enforcer of the law. And they've ruled time and time again that a police officer has no duty to protect anyone. So what is his actual role? His role is to enforce policy, not to protect. They are not to protect and serve. And we've had that discussion over and over again, even on your show, about the actual role of a police officer. So if they don't have the duty to protect, their only duty is to serve the bureaucrats who give them their duty to follow orders directly. They have no other duty. They have no duty to you, no responsibility to you at all. Defund the police.
Adam, I got a retired Chicago police officer on the line here. I don't know if he agrees with you or disagrees with you, but I don't know.
Fine. Partially yes and partially no. But before I deal with, because I've been taking some notes, but before I deal with what the gentleman said, and much of it is well considered, and I do respect his commentary, I'd like to, what I'm about to say is not an advocacy, so don't misunderstand me. I'm simply relating a historical fact that occurred within living memory that I think does have some relevance to what we're speaking of today. And that is what happened in Athens, Tennessee in 1946. There was a
Hallmark TV
movie about it. Came out in 1996. It was called An American Story. And a gentleman just wrote a book about it called The Fighting Bunch, The Battle of Athens, and how World War II veterans won the only successful armed rebellion since the Revolution. It is a real tale. They actually exchanged gunfire with the authorities at the time who were thoroughly and utterly corrupt, tyrannizing and bullying the population, not allowing citizens to cast ballots. And these GIs who'd been through Guadalcanal and Okinawa and Normandy and the Bulge, they got their privately owned weapons. They broke into the National Guard Army, and they shot it out with the sheriff and the corrupt law enforcement authorities in the county. And they prevailed. They got them indicted. Now, the reason they didn't talk about it very much was because they technically, and not technically, they actually committed a number of crimes. The authorities just chose to overlook it and not try to indict any of them. But it actually happened. If you want to see the made-for-TV movie depicts the events fairly accurately. The book by Chris DeRose does an even better job, goes into great detail. It was an armed rebellion that succeeded. Now, I'm not advocating this. I'm not saying you should. I'm simply bringing to light a historical truth that many people are simply not even aware of.
Okay. All right. I got to get to this private caller. I've been waiting a while here. Bring him on. I don't know who it is, so we'll just see what happens here. Go ahead, private caller.
Hey, man. This is Dwayne, and I'm from Black Lives Matter. What do you want?
What do I want? I don't know, Dwayne. What do I want?
Yeah. Well, you want to talk, so yeah.
Well, you've been listening to the show, so go ahead, talk. I'm giving you a worldwide platform right here. I'm not giving you a scripted Fox News here.
You talked about white people being in our organization. All they are just puppets. You know, we don't really care about them. They're just useless idiots. But that's why we got white people in the Black Lives Matter.
Okay. So what chapter? What state you from there, Dwayne?
Well, I'm from the state of New York.
New York, oh boy. Okay, any message you want to give out there to the white people that are punks and the white and the black people that are marching with you? I guess I don't know. What's Black Lives Matter up to today?
You know. Well, you know, we caught one of our superiors trying to buy houses that she resides. You know, we don't want that to look bad on us, you know, because we get that Jewish Soros money, you know, because we know who gives us. And we're trying to use that as right as possible and to fund more events for all of our people to get flats, rent a car, to go out to, you
Bricks.
Know, to go and practice.
Bricks too, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I agree with that or not, you know, but what's up with burning down Dollar Trees and stuff like that? I mean, what did they ever do to you? I mean, how's that going to change the system for you?
Well, that's not really Black Lives Matter. That's just those, you know, people within the neighborhood. You know, they're just tired.
Oh, okay.
You know, they're bored, and that's what they do. But that's not part of Black Lives Matter.
Okay. All right. Well, how come the Black Lives Matter people don't stop them when they start doing that criminal activity there? I don't know about burning down small business owners' buildings, you know. I mean, that's just – I mean, that don't make any sense, man. I mean, why don't you guys got the, if you're there, why not stop them, you know, help the police out? You know, you guys can join forces maybe.
Well, we don't like the police. You know, we're going to get them out, and we're going to put in Black Panthers to
Black Panther.
Yes, sir.
Oh, boy. Wow. Black Panthers. Wow. So you got that. So Black Panthers, you got enough. I mean, how many police are in the country right now? What's the number of law enforcement in the country? You going to be able to replace them with all Black Panthers?
Yeah. Black Panthers. Okay. And then we're going to get some people we're going to get some help from Biden. He's going to bring in some troops to help us as well.
Well, wait a second here. Troops? There's not supposed to be any military patrolling around the streets. What do you mean, troops?
You know, you're going to have the National Guard.
Oh, National
along
Guard.
Along with Black Panthers.
Oh, they're going to be working with the Black Panthers, the National Guard, huh?
Yeah, they're going to be taking orders for the Black Panthers.
Oh, orders even. Wow. So we're just going to be, oh, wow, you guys got more authority than the governor. Man. Well, I mean, I appreciate the update there. I'm in New York there. Yeah, but how is it going in New York right now? Can you give me any inside information, like when the next event is?
We're planning on some soon. You'll find out. You know what I'm saying? Because we don't like to say what we're going to do because, you know, you guys are enemies, you know? We don't want you to know what our next move is.
Well, I mean, you guys. What do you mean, you guys? I mean, my show is called Understanding the Times in Which We Live Today. Why you say you guys? I mean, you know, I'm just trying to understand the times in which we live today.
You guys, man. Crackers, man. You crackers.
Oh, crackers. Crackers, now, why would you call us a cracker? Now, what's up with that term real quick? Why would you say that? I mean, isn't that kind of insulting?
So,
insulting?
This guy is about as Black Lives Matter as I am, Barbara Streisand.
I know, right? He's a good one, though. He was a good one.
What do you want me to call you? What do you want me to call you? White flower?
You can call me Barbara Streisand. I identify as Barbara Streisand.
All right, private caller. Thank you, private caller. I appreciate it. I appreciate the Black Lives Matter input from New York there.
Why
I was trying
to get
home to North Carolina.
Give
him a call.
You see? You're trying to get rid of me, man.
Well, I mean, you really don't have something new to add here. So, anyway, give me something new here. Give me some new material.
Well, let's talk. This is a dialogue.
All right, I'll leave you on the line then, okay? I'll leave you on the line. But you got to be polite, though. You know, you got to be polite, though, you know? Hey, let me get Sarah back in. Sarah, what do you think about this? Let me get Sarah. She says all lives matter. Go ahead, Sarah.
Hey. Still there? Hey, Adam.
Yeah.
Hi,
good
Sarah.
To hear you, Adam. It's been a while. I've missed you.
Yeah.
And all lives matter. I think that no lives matter unless all lives matter. Black lives matter, white lives matter, red lives matter, all lives matter. Life matters. Period. And that we're all just humans trying to live life. You know, everybody wants to be left alone. Why can't we just all lives matter though?
Well, I think that's been tried though, Sarah. I mean, this all that we just get along just doesn't work. I mean, Adam, what do you think about this? Sarah's been talking about this a while. Why can't we all just get along type of thing, you know? It's not going to happen, right? I mean, it just can't happen. I mean, there's just too many different levels of education out there, different classes of people. I mean, unless we just give the bank away and just say, hey, everybody gets a house and everybody lives in the same-looking house, the same-size house, everybody drives the same car, and meanwhile, we all take the microchip and get the knock-a-lady.
Hey,
you know, I mean, you know, unless that works, right? That's the only way.
No.
Hey, Joe, this is
that's
why. Because BLM ain't a bunch of kumbayaists. They are ruthless totalitarians. They want power. They're not interested in getting along with you or me or anybody else. They want power, control, and authority over your life.
That's
right. They can't have it.
And that is correct. That is correct. So if you look at the history of the rise of the Nazis, everyone knows what the Nazis did. How did Hitler get into power? The brown shirts ran around creating utter chaos in the streets in their conflict with communists. So you basically had two factions ruling the streets of pre-Nazi Germany, which was the communists and the fascists. The fascists happened to win out as the group that sounded most beneficial to the people who were looking to end the carnage and tyranny that was happening in their streets. So what we're seeing right now is a Marxist movement. The leaders of BLM and Antifa, they're the exact same thing as the brown shirts and the communists that fought in the streets of Germany. The BLM is openly communist. They'll tell you they're a Marxist movement. They don't even hide that. Most of their upper leadership openly admits that they've taken Marxist training and whatnot. And Antifa would be anti-fascist, but they're fascist in their implementation of everything they do. So, I mean, it's ridiculous. We've got the exact same situation unfolding in the United States as we did pre-Nazi Germany. So what is the purpose of that other than to create a massive problem? Now, let's go back to Barack Obama and his signing of the order that rescinded the banning of the U.S. government and propaganda. They are now allowed to institute any propaganda campaign by officially, not that they ever really stopped, but they can now officially and openly just do whatever they want. So what's to say that a lot of what is going on in this country right now isn't a literal political propaganda campaign to divide the Americans to the point where there's so much chaos in the streets that they would accept their own enslavement as a solution to the problem? That's exactly what happened in Nazi Germany.
Yeah. Well,
yep.
This is what their platform says. But hang on a second. This is what their platform says. It says protect the freedom to vote in your state and across the country. This is as of June 22nd. We need everyone to contact their senators now, regardless of their political party, to demand they vote for the People Act. Passing For the People Act is an essential step in our battle against white supremacy. Use our easy tool to call your senators and demand they support our freedom to vote. Phone calls are easy and have a huge impact. Now, I don't know what they mean by white supremacy. I don't see what that's got to do with anything. But what's wrong with that though? Contacting your local senators.
Here's what they're counting on. They're very cynical as well as ruthless. And in their cynicism, they're counting on people like decent people like Sarah, who want people to get along with each other, the normal instinct of most normal people in this country. They count on this to say that out of the chaos, in order, as the gentleman just said moments ago, out of the chaos, they are willing to accept a diminution of their liberty in order to have tranquility and peace. They are counting on the decency of people to turn it against them so they can instill a ruthless and near or absolutely totalitarian regime upon them. It is the utmost in cynicism and manipulation.
Well, I sent a message to the Black Lives Matter, the woman here that's here in North Carolina, and she did respond back to me, but I don't know if she's going to call in or not. But I don't know about the gentleman there from New York, if he's from Black Lives Matter in New York or not. I don't know, but he said his name is Dwayne. I just don't see what's wrong with some of the stuff that they are promoting. I mean, for instance, they're saying, help us fight disinformation. What's wrong with that? We need to see what you see. Black Lives Matter is a central target of disinformation, and you are a key line of defense. Report suspicious sites, stories, and social media accounts, and post about this on the BLM. I mean, I do that, actually. Am I a Marxist? I mean, my show's called Understanding the Times, which is today. I expose the New World Order, you know?
Of course not. I mean, there's always some things you're going to find resonance with. Anything. I mean, we're all for looking both ways when you cross the street. I'm sure BLM is for that, too. I mean, they probably like their dogs. You know, they probably think their children ought to have a good education. So, I mean, in that sense, yeah, I'm sure that you could agree with them on many, many things. But in the fundamental thing, reordering the society, remaking the Constitution or abolishing it, destroying the notion of liberty, federalism, and state sovereignty, among other things. On these things, there can be no compromise, and they don't intend to.
Okay.
Trust me,
and he is absolutely right.
I've been studying BLM and critical race theory since the mid-1990s, and I know what these people want. They are, as the gentleman said, thoroughly and undoubtedly Marxist. It is reformulated Marxism for the American people, taking advantage of the knowledge of the original sin of racism and slavery that this country was born with. Not founded on, that is a lie, but incidentally part of our history. They're taking advantage of it, and they're using a Marxist technique in order to implement it.
All right, go ahead, Adam. Go ahead, Adam. I know you had something to say.
So along that line, I'm just going to continue the role because he's doing wonderfully here. So another one of DeSantis's rules, any local government that refuses to provide adequate protection for its citizens will forfeit its sovereign immunity protection. In other words, the state of Florida, if the state of Florida deems that you have that the local government has agreed to your movement, your assembly that the state has deemed a violent assembly, which could be, you know, who defines that? Well, of course, they didn't define it within this law, so it's left up to interpretation by those who would apparently administer that law, a.k.a. the state government. So we look at what happened in Virginia during the Second Amendment rally, all of the people that took over Richmond, Virginia, block a, another one of the laws that DeSantis passed, block a road, that's a felony. Okay? Have a violent assembly, that's a felony. Who decides what's violent? What happens when the state governor, who is unlawfully ruling his state, he, the gentleman over here talked about Tennessee. I love that story about Athens, Tennessee. They all should have and could have under these laws, or the assembly in Richmond, Virginia, where all the gun owners came with their guns and took over Richmond, Virginia.
Hey, okay. Adam, I actually got the Black Lives Matter individual on here. I believe it's a female.
Oh.
It's a 910 number. I'm not going to give out her number, but I got her on, so I'm going to bring her on. And obviously the conversation here is we're talking about the Black Lives Matter movement and whatnot and trying to learn about it and talk about it. And I've been very objective, and I went to the website there and looked up, and I said, hey, what's wrong with some of this stuff? And some people are saying, hey, they don't support the Constitution. They don't love America. They can't stand America, you know. So I'm going to give them a chance, you know, to uninterrupted, unscreened to talk. Go ahead, 910. Go ahead.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I was enjoying the gentleman's conversation before I got on, and I'm glad that that they are bringing awareness to some of these laws that they're doing in the wonderful state of North Carolina. My name is Sonia Patrick. I chair Black Lives Matter in Wilmington, North Carolina. Wilmington, North Carolina is the home of the only government takeover and massacre in 18. The only successful government takeover in the history of the country happened in 1898, where blacks were killed. At Black Lives Matter, we believe in protest and policy. It takes more than marching, and it's a shame we live in a country where we're fighting for the same things our ancestors fought for 60 years ago. Many Black Lives Matter, as myself, I'm also a daughter of a disabled veteran, and my father loved God, family, and country in that order. And when you stepped on this porch, you better respect the
yeah.
flag of the United States of America. So to
wow.
give you a little bit he was proud. He was a proud veteran, my dad. My brother was also a veteran, and he gave me the first he gave me the first autobiography I ever read was the autobiography of Malcolm X. We believe in family. We believe in country. And we want to, right now we don't feel safe with law enforcement. My dad was had an altercation with the law enforcement, I think 10 years before I was born. They asked him to step out the car. He stepped out the car. They hit him on the temple, and he carried that scar his whole life. He would show me that scar, and the blood flew everywhere, and my mom fainted, and I was just curious how my dad survived that. But my dad was the type of person, when you made him mad, he got stronger, so he grabbed one of the law enforcement officers, and make a long story short, they took him into custody, and my grandmother was able to get him out of jail.
And I'm sure they beat him up, too. I'm sure they roughed him up when they got him in there because, you know, back in those days, and they still do it today, obviously, but I'm just saying they probably beat the heck out of him, you know, I mean, which is a shame.
I don't know how I got here. I know he had that scar on his head where they hit him with the club, and I don't know to this day how my dad survived that. I really don't. But he did show me that scar. So, you know, like I said, a lot of us have given our, you know, our veterans have given our lives for this country. And it's time for the country to come together because a divided house will fall. And, you know, we don't feel safe with law enforcement. We just do not feel safe with law enforcement. And,
I can't
you know,
Well, I have a retired Chicago police officer on the line right now with me, and he saw discrimination and fought against he's a black male, and he fought against this the same thing, but he has a different he doesn't really believe in. I don't know, Sarge, go ahead. I'm gonna go ahead and put you on. Go ahead, Sarge.
All right, now there's a multitude of issues that are being spoken to here. And, of course, now, listening to this lady, there is absolutely nothing about her that is threatening. She has said nothing at all that is controversial or even should be alarming. However, I don't think she's accurately representing the ultimate intentions of Black Lives Matter. She may not be aware of them. She may believe in exactly what she says. But I've gone to their website. I had their website and used to regularly look at it while they would do their precepts. They have taken it down. It's not available. You get the 404 when you try to go there. The remarks about being trained Marxists have been removed. They don't want you to know that. They don't want you to know that they were founded on Marxist principles and they organized originally around the principles of Marxism. See, and when you talk about police, there are many aspects of police misconduct that I have absolutely no problem with anyone addressing. I would refer you to recent horrific scandals, like the Rampart Police Department scandal in Los Angeles. Truly horrific corruption involving 70 or more Los Angeles police officers, to include murder, attempted murder, and stealing drugs from the evidence room to sell on the street. I know that can happen. New York, you got the same thing. You got the same thing in Chicago. I'm fully aware of it and cognizant of it, and eternal vigilance is the price for the police. You got to stay on top of the police, make sure they're not abusing the authority. Now, having said that, police are absolutely essential to maintain civilization. If you don't have the police as they're presently constituted, you're going to have another kind of police. I can guarantee you. Nature abhors a vacuum. It will fill it. The question is, will it fill it with ones that are determined to protect individual liberties, rights, at least in principle, or are you going to have one that implements the wishes and desires of a totalitarian regime? I believe under an organization like Black Lives Matter, it will be the latter and not the former. Yes, there are problems with the police. Yes, they need to be addressed. Yes, they need better training. Yes, they need better selection process. All of these things are true. But the point of the matter is that they take an oath to obey the Constitution, to administer the laws fairly, and there are any number, a host, a veritable multitude of laws at the state and local level, laws, criminally sanctioned laws, and there are also regulations in the police department that govern a police officer's behavior. You've got to hold them accountable. You've got to do it continually and always.
Well, isn't that what they're doing, sir?
First and foremost,
isn't that what
you've
they're
got
doing?
To elect
isn't that what Black Lives Matter is doing?
Officials who will ensure that the police adhere to them.
But isn't that what they're doing, sir? They're holding them accountable. But
go ahead,
ma'am. I didn't mean to cut you out. Go ahead.
It depends on where you are.
No, hang on, sir.
But now I have the actual abuse of the police by the authorities and, to some degree, many in the public. It's gone too far.
All right, go ahead, ma'am.
First of all, we live in a nation where, unfortunately, an officer rarely gets charged for killing an unarmed black man, let alone convicted, as in the case with George Floyd. And probably one of the most – I cannot watch the whole thing. I'm going to be honest with you. I have not watched the whole thing. It's very difficult to watch. And what disturbed me doing this whole thing was I remember having a former conversation about it with a white gentleman whose grandfather was a sheriff. And it was very uncomfortable to hear this, but he said his father, who was a sheriff for many years, retired sheriff, in North Carolina would not have a problem with what happened to George Floyd. So this is an issue of humanity. This is an issue of morality. And we have held officers accountable. Right now, I have to talk to a family, a mother whose son was shot 27 times, unarmed, by law enforcement because he had a cell phone, and no one held accountable. I don't know what Facebook page you were talking about, but your comments sound very biased, extremely biased. I don't even know what Black Lives Matter page is, but let me tell you about Black Lives Matter. We as black people define what that is to us. And, we define that. And it means different things to different people. That's what's so beautiful about the movement. You define what it is to you and what you experience. I am a descendant of former prisoner of wars. People were captive and made into slaves. And I'm very proud of that, because if I can endure that, failure is not an option. I have no excuse for failure. And when I listen to people, and I don't understand people, they didn't do the shooting, but yet they want to defend this type of injustice. And then George Floyd only got, he didn't even get the maximum. And if it wasn't for that young lady with the cell phone, Lord have mercy. And it's okay to people. And then y'all going to defend that? Yeah, it may be some good officers, but it's not enough of you. And we don't feel safe with you. We have, and history will prove why we shouldn't.
I have to agree with her, Sergeant. I got to interrupt. I have to agree with her on the aspect that, you know, why can't the community, or any community, well, not just black community, any group of people, why is it that they feel uncomfortable or unsafe or, with the police in their community? Oh. I mean, I'm not trying to bash anybody here. I'm just trying to say is, why should that be here in America today? Why should anyone have that feeling, or why should anybody be murdered by a police officer during a traffic stop? A traffic stop.
All right.
Come on.
Have you not noticed that even in cases of clear, I mean undoubted, I'm not talking about where there's ambiguity or some situation like, and by the way, I agree with you about George Floyd that the officer deserved punishment. I don't think it was murder, but it was certainly involuntary or voluntary
manslaughter.
He deserved to go to jail. I don't want to rehash that right now. I want to go on to cases where there is clear and undoubted examples of misconduct by a suspect, where a police officer is required and obligated to use the requisite force to bring them under arrest. I'm not talking about cases where police officers do wrong. They should be punished. And where necessary, they should be prosecuted. What we have today in 2021 is a situation where all too frequently, when you can clearly see misconduct by a suspect in cases of resisting arrest, not only are these suspects not held to any scrutiny, the police officers are condemned for simply using the legal amount of necessary force. And in fact, the suspects are lionized and held up to almost a level of sainthood.
Hey, Sarge, like they want to give them angel wings and halos. Sarge, can I interject
here?
This is the problem we're having now. Sarge, we got to remember this. Hang on a second. But most, you know what, how about, you know, if we were to really, because a lot of these reasons for traffic stops are wrong. You know, this harassment of the citizens is wrong. You know, there's no crime being committed. Nobody's injuring anybody. So these people are pulled over. They're harassed. And, you know, and look, if you don't feel safe, you feel threatened, what are you going to do? You're going to be afraid. And that fear grows, and then a bad situation happens. So why interact with the community like that? Why do we need law enforcement? I mean, why not, keep the peace in the community?
If I was a politician and I got elected, the first thing I would do would be to remove unnecessary and redundant laws for the police to enforce. How many times have I said that? The police have too many laws they're enforcing right now. They don't need to be enforced.
No, I know, and I want to give the lady a
so that's one of the problems right there. But all of us agree. There's no argument that people need to be protected from murder and rape and aggravated battery and situations of fraud and drug dealing involving violence and all the rest of it. There's no argument about that. And I'm talking about in those instances, those type of violent crimes that make you look over your shoulder when you're walking down the street at 1 o'clock in the morning, those kind of crimes are wildly disproportionately committed in the black community. And it's not even close. It's wildly disproportionate.
But police
go where the crime is. They go where the crime is. They're assigned where the crime is.
That's where the crime is. That's where the crime that people are ringing the phones off
to
the police complaining about.
Okay, Sarge, hang on a second. I want to give the lady as much time as possible because we got about 19 minutes left. I want to make sure she gets her full say of what you know, represent the Black Lives Matters movement and whatnot, because I want, you know, without us, you know, attacking or trying to question, you know, or anything, because there's plenty of time to question. I'm sure she's open for questions, but we don't have enough time for that. So, ma'am, go ahead. I'm going to give you the floor as long as possible here to say what you need to say, okay?
Thank you so much. We do believe in policy, and a lot of times we have had bills that try to get legislation and didn't make it. Right now the George Floyd bill is on the table to bring about police accountability, our issue is law enforcement is not held accountable for killing unarmed Black people. It's a reality. It's a fact. Now, why are you over there doing all that loud talking? I don't understand any of it. Really, I don't. We are dealing with this issue right here. And we do live in an institutionalized system that is designed to oppress Black people as much as possible. That's a reality. It is what it is. I live it every day. But I'm a survivor.
Okay.
But we do believe in legislation. We have taking many trips to our congressmen, the General Assembly, continues on and on. But this is a moral issue. It's a moral issue. This is what this is about. This is a moral issue. And
ma'am, what do you say? What does Black Lives Matter, though, as you're speaking on behalf of them here in North Carolina? What would you say as far as to the consensus out there? Obviously, we know the media portrays things wrong. We know that. They twist the narrative and they play it for their viewers. And that's feeding into this dissension of maybe not knowing the truth, you know, about something, like you said, because you came on here and you were like, yeah, I support, you know, my dad was a veteran. He was, you know, brutally beaten by the police, you know. So a lot of people don't know that stuff, you know, because they're not going to hear that, you know, on the news media. So, but what do you say to the people out there that have this view that saying, are you saying that everything that's portrayed in the newspapers and the news media is basically pretty much inaccurate? Because there is a vibe out there that says, hey, you know, it's Marxism, you know, and people are scared of that. They don't want communism or Marxism. They, you know, they want their freedom here in America, so they feel that that's a threat to them. I'm just saying, you know, that's maybe what they're viewing it as. What would you say to them?
Well, I think it's sad that those same people that would say that had no problems with what happened on January 6th at the Capitol, but yet they have the audacity to call Black Lives Matter a terrorist group. We don't have a history. Black people in general don't have a history of killing white people. They have a history of massacring us. I mean, there have been 44 massacres in this country alone within a 100-year period that we know of. Of massacring Black people. So I think white people are smarter. I think they know what's really going on here. I don't think they don't know. I think they do know. There's no way you benefit from white privilege and don't know what's going on. The question is, are you willing to change it? Are you willing to join and speak truth to power to help us move in a different direction? Because we're moving regardless. Because the arc of the universe is long, but it bends towards justice.
Okay, and so how would you suggest then, okay, because you're going to get a lot of people that disagree with that statement now, but I'm just saying, so how would you suggest everybody move forward? What should they do?
First of all, you have to, if you have a negative perception of Black Lives Matter, you have to look at it for what it is. This is an issue of humanity. You believe in what's right, you know, and if you're a Christian, when you see an injustice, it's your Christian duty to these Christians out here, it's your Christian duty to do what's just and what's right. That's what Jesus would want us to do, what's just and what's right. If you see an injustice, make a difference. Have those uncomfortable conversations. I have them all the time. I have friends that are Republicans, unaffiliate, Democrats, Dixiecrats, all of them. You know, but we have to come together as a nation. This is the United States of America. We are one nation under God with justice and liberty for all.
So the BLM then, does the BLM support the founding documents of the Constitution? I mean, basically, and we all agree, slavery, okay, wrong, we all agree. But, you know, but the document itself, all of us are created equal and have the right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness here in America. So does BLM agree with the founding documents, or did they want to erase our history?
Well, I don't know. We don't have any intentions to erase our history. That's what the nation is built on. We want to improve the future history. We want to improve the future of America. We can't change what's happened in the past. It is what it is. What we want to do is make things better for the future. And this is one thing. This is why I know, you know, if you can say, well, look, I don't own slaves. I get that. But why are you not trying to make things better? Well, I didn't have anything to do with the mess. I get that. So why are you not trying to make things better? Well, I didn't shoot a person. I get that. But why are you not trying to think, you know, trying to make things better? Now, I would like to mention, with all due respect to those lives lost, Brandon Webster was shot at a traffic violation in Southport, North Carolina, in Salope. Traffic violation where he's at 9 times by state trooper. No one held accountable. Do you know what it's like to look at that family when their son drove, went to the home, and was there shot and fell, collapsed? Do you know what that does to a family? Do you have a moral conscience? Brandon Smith, another Brandon, was shot in 2013 27 times unarmed by law enforcement when he had a cell phone in his hand. Do you know what that does to the family? Do you understand what that happens? This is right in North Carolina now.
Yeah. No, I agree. I want to bring on 909. I think she's another podcaster, a fellow podcaster. I want to bring her on. So go ahead, 909. Are you there? I think this is Suzette. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is not Suzette. This is.
Okay. No, sorry. Sorry. Wrong person. Sorry. I thought it was Suzette. Sorry. Don't want to take away from the podcast here tonight. Sorry. You just got to wait there. Ma'am, I'm wrapping down the show. So I just, like I said, if there's anything else you want to add, I'm going to give you the floor here. And Sarge, is there anything you want to say real quick here before I let her go? And because we're going to wrap up the podcast here.
Yeah, there's one thing I wanted to say real quickly. The issue of unarmed men being shot by the police. Now, I want her to know, I never killed anyone when I was a police officer. 26 years, and I don't know how many fights I got in with suspects. Took them into custody. Nobody killed. Nobody. I'm going to make that clear. However, at 5 occasions, I was in a life and death struggle for my firearm. No healthy adult male is ever unarmed in a confrontation because, number one, they got their fists and feet, which kill more people every year, according to the FBI, than do assault weapons. With their fists and feet, they can kill you, and if they don't kill you with their fists and their feet, they can take your gun from you and kill you with it. On 5 occasions, I was in a life and death struggle for my firearm when I told an individual wanted on an arrest warrant in the first instance, you are under arrest. There is a warrant. I can't work out the details of the warrant or whether or not it's justly issued. He's going to have to deal with that in court. It's my duty to bring it before the court to answer to the warrant. When they say no, it's going to be on because you're either going to defeat me and get away or I'm going to take you into custody. There's not going to be any in between. So when it comes to things like that, you hear an unarmed man being killed by the police, I can guarantee you they're healthy and fit. They're not unarmed. And I want to hear the circumstances under which that individual was killed before I can tell you as to whether or not it was justified or not. Because believe me, been there, done that, much more than once.
Okay, Sarge, I want to bring on 614's got a question for you, ma'am, if you can. I know this individual, so go ahead.
Well, what I wanted to mention was that we're talking about unarmed black people. I would like to point out, as we're continuing to run down cases, that those things are unarmed. Anybody being shot by a police officer is a tragedy. I would also like to remind people that Daniel Shaver, who was shot by a police officer, that's a case that we ought to look at, too. What was the actual problem? What I think Sarge may agree with me, there are officers on the force that don't understand that they are there to de-escalate and protect even the person they're there to arrest. they have a duty to all individuals. And there are officers who believe that because they have this immunity that they are not held accountable, and we, the people, aren't holding them accountable to what they do. We're not holding the agencies accountable or the agents. So at large, we have a problem with law enforcement policies and the confrontations that are being created by laws. That, and Sarge pointed that out too. There are an awful lot of laws on the books that these men and women of law enforcement are being brought to enforce that have nothing to do with your safety and everything to do with the state gaining. You are supposed to be the beneficiary of every law created. It's for your benefit. And the state, unfortunately, has gotten this idea that they can, by their agents, become the beneficiary of the laws they create and somehow gain wealth or power by them. And they use law enforcement to enforce those things. That was never their original intent and never the reason any of the people consented to their existence to begin with. So on face value, this woman that's talking, I kind of agree with some of what she asserts, but those things don't just apply to black people. There are white people being murdered. There are Chinese people being murdered. There's everybody being murdered by certain members of law enforcement who are just unruly. They don't have the professionalism and the ability to de-escalate and protect those who they are actually there technically to arrest, but they have a duty to all people. They become judge, jury, and executioner on the spot because they believe they have the legal ability to do so. They have more rights than the rest of us. When a law enforcement officer can point a gun at a man and say, I believe he had a gun, and shoot him dead, and the guy didn't have a gun, you and I would go to prison for that. A law enforcement officer won't. And that's the problem. That's the problem. And more rules and laws aren't going to fix that, because who's going to enforce the more rules and laws? Nobody, because the people who created the situation as it exists now are the ones we're going to expect to carry out the new laws. No. The way this is being handled presently is already unlawful. It's already against the people. It sets up a we against them mentality. The law enforcement and the community at large should never view each other as predator and prey, us against them, but that's what we've been set up by the politicians and the bureaucrats. That's the situation that exists. When a law enforcer rolls down the street of any neighborhood, whether it's in the ghetto, whether it's in the rich neighborhoods, wherever they go, they should be seen as the peacekeepers. Everyone should feel like they are keeping the peace, not harassing, not holding them at gunpoint to extort them to take their property for running a red light or whatever it is. Those things are extortion. They're predators. It's predator versus prey. That's what we've been set up to do, and that's the problem we need to be addressing. And I yield.
Well, thank you, Adam. Appreciate that, Adam. Thank you so much. Ma'am, I'll let you wrap it up. I'll get you let you get the final. We got 4 minutes left, so go ahead. I appreciate you coming on, though. I kind of put this on you, but, hey, you got a lot of courage calling into a podcast show and, you know, and just you're just having at it with us. So, most of us agree with what you had to say. So go ahead. I'll give you the floor here to wrap it up.
Thank you so much, and thank you. I enjoyed the conversation, and thank you so much for having me. I would like to say Black Lives Matter Wilmington did advocate for one white life that was lost, and that was Grace Deep. She was shot by law enforcement when they had a suicide attempt. So we filed a complaint with the Department of Justice, just like we did with the other three altercations. I think it was a total of 4 altercations that happened within a 190-day period. Respect to the victims, Tevin Robinson was one of them, and another altercation with law enforcement. So our issue is not with the officers that are trying to do the job, but it's with those that are not held accountable. And what's confusing to me, just like the officer said, a lot of officers don't even use their guns. So why are you using them on unarmed black people does raise questions. In Wilmington, there were officers that actually recorded talking about some kind of war or some racial thing going on, but we couldn't hear the tape because there's a law where they wouldn't release the tape. But not long after that, January 6th happened. So these are concerns. We can't decide the good, the bad, and the ugly when we call law enforcement. We only hope for the best. But we do not feel safe with law enforcement. And I think that I think it's Sarge, I think it's Sir.
Yes, we're not talking about
those that are trying to do the job, but we can't wait to figure it out. Every case you hear that made the media, that made the mainstream, it's probably 100 or thousands that never make the mainstream. That because there were no cameras, there was no proof, but the family's wondering, well, why has he got 5 bullets? Or what, you know, why did this happen? There are a lot of cover ups within law enforcement. That's no secret. But at the end of the day, we have to come together as a nation. We are the United States of America. Let us rise together with love and unity, and build this country for a better future. We can't change the past, but we can move forward to a better future. And call your legislator if you want to get involved. Call your senator, Senator Tillis, Senator Burr, and tell them to pass the George Floyd Bill, Justice and Policing Act. Call them up. Some of y'all might know him personally, may have lunch with him. Call him up. We definitely need his vote on that. We're very disappointed about the H.R. 1 bill, how that went across, but we're not giving up because our ancestors didn't give up on us. So we want to move forward together in unity, continue to speak truth to power, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome very much. Thank you. You're very well spoken, and I appreciate it. I'd like to have a private conversation with you sometime in the future. Whenever you have time, just send me a text message. You got my number. And I'm here in Stokesdale, North Carolina. So it'd be great. Everybody, I want to say thank you for joining us tonight. It was a great show. Understanding the Times in Which We Live Today, that's the name of the show. So thank you so much. God bless. Take care.
Good night.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
In Dallas, Texas, 3 shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
It is a big idea, a new world order.
It was almost as if it were a planned implosion. It just pancaked.
Either you were with us, or you were with the terrorists.